Good evening. Welcome to the broadcast. Glad you are with us. I'm going to be joined tonight by Rebecca Walzer. We have another bank that appears to be on the verge of collapse. We're also going to be joined by Patrick Wood. Many of you know that Patrick has been MIA for a while because, and a good reason, my friend, he had to have some heart surgery. We're glad he's back. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask him, but I think this might be his first appearance back after surgery about 3 weeks ago. But we'll find out. But I know if he has, he hasn't done many because he has been ordered to rest and recuperate. So Patrick Wood's going to join us for an update on transhumanism, technocracy, and particularly the Neuralink by Elon Musk. We're going to show you some video tonight. Elon Musk would like to implant a little device, a Neuralink, he calls it, at the top of your head. Again, transhumanism, technocracy, all things the internet. You're gonna have to hear this tonight. And it fits with the idea of the globalist plan, their plan for policing to be done by military-equipped transhuman robotic police. Globalist plan for future policing to be done by military-equipped transhuman robotic police. New article tonight at the expose, but it also, they have included in their article a video by Elon Musk. And I want to share that with you tonight and get the response from Patrick Wood. Then Tina Peters, the clerk out of Mesa County, Colorado, she joins us. I think right now she's got a bracelet and they're making her stay at home, but they're still after her. I think this is what we call lawfare. But she also has another report she needs to bring us tonight. And so we'll have a busy night. And I think we're going to work in some of your calls here as well. Joining me now is Rebecca Walzer. Rebecca, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. Glad to be back.
Well, thank you for making time for us on a Friday night. But I knew we had to call you and get you on because I saw this headline and I sent it to you. Like, oh boy, here we go. And this has to do with one of these banks. It's somewhere in this long list of articles I had today, but that has to do with one of these banks. I guess I can't find it now, but I'll go back through and find
it. First Republic.
Yeah, First Republic. I mean, looks like it always seems to happen on a Friday, just like that FDIC video from November 2022.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Hopefully it'll be on a Friday. You know, it always seems to come out on a Friday,
yeah.
But this bank is in trouble. And again, more evidence that this is not stopping this bank crisis, correct?
Exactly what we said. So Reuters is reporting after hours just tonight that the FDIC is preparing for receivership for First Republic. And, you know, to give people a perspective, Brandon, of how big of a crisis this is, just looking at the numbers, at the highest market cap, which was November of 2021, and market capitalization, I'm sure everyone watching your show knows, but I don't want to make any assumptions. So market capitalization is the price of the stock times the number of outstanding shares. That's the market capitalization. So its highest peak valuation market cap was $40 billion, and that was in November of 2021. At its lowest peak right now, at its lowest trough, I should say, was $557 million. And I think, Brennan, this is your point about it coming out today on a Friday is very valid. However, what I want people to understand is what actually happened here. Okay. If we go back in time and we actually realize that this bank was collapsing alongside SVB, right? Do you remember that?
Yes.
But what happened was the big banks stepped in with $30 billion to backstop this. And now we have an FDIC receivership. So what does that actually equate to, right? It's like the multi-level equation. In tax law, we would apply what we call the step transaction doctrine. In other words, no, the FDIC, Joe Biden, and Janet Yellen did not want to come out that same weekend they were dealing with SVB and deal with First Republic. So guess what they did? They farmed it off that, oh, it's going to be saved. These big banks are going to get involved and we're going to deal with this and backstop it. But all that did was delay that to the end of April. And now the FDIC steps in and it's receivership. And it's once again the taxpayer funded bailout. And it's got to stop.
Here's the headline. I finally found it. First Republic shares plunge 50% to new record low as report claims bank will, quote, most likely, end quote, be seized by FDIC regulators if urgent government brokered rescue talks fail. How much money does the FDIC have left? They about tapped it all out just with the last bank failure, right?
You know, the FDIC, I want to go into an article I wrote for Fox Business in December of 2018, where I explain Social Security pretty well, I think, for a very brief article. It was a very, very well-researched article. And the thing, Brandon, that people have never heard of before is an STN, a Special Treasury Note. A special treasury note is specific to the Social Security Trust Fund. I'm going somewhere with this. I'm going to tie this back to what we're talking about. But what it is a, you know, the Supreme Court ruled in a case because they were basically, the federal government was sued by a taxpayer group that was concerned that the federal government was tapping into the Social Security Trust Fund for non-Social Security payments. And so the Supreme Court, this went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they did this review. And of course, the Supreme Court is constrained with how the law is actually written unless it's unconstitutional. So they really only have two functions. They can either declare a law unconstitutional and therefore it is null and void, as the Constitution is the ultra arbiter of every law in our country, if they're applied correctly, I might add, which has not happened in quite some years. But if we assume that it's a constitutional law, then the judiciary interprets the law as it is written. And that's where most of the gray area in the law comes in. It's always in how the law is interpreted as it is written. And the Supreme, the Congress in 1935, when Social Security was written, was smart enough to reserve the right to amend, modify, or cancel the program at any time. And so the Supreme Court had to rule that the tax of Social Security through your payroll system is a tax like any other, and the federal government did have the right to use that money for whatever purposes they legitimately had, and that we as U.S. citizens have, hear what I'm saying, we have no right to Social Security, even though we are paying in Social Security taxes. But what the Supreme Court did find is that they had to account for the program separate and apart, just like they have to with Medicare, even though it didn't come on board until 65 and Social Security was 35. It has to be accounted for separately, which is why we have a Social Security trustee for the trust fund. We have a Medicare trustee for that. So the point is that you have these economists all the time talk about this $3 trillion that we've collected since 1935 that we have not paid out in Social Security payments. And you'll see economists reports all the time that say Social Security Trust Fund expected to last through 2034. And brace yourself, folks, that's when we actually have to do something. What they don't tell you is that, basically, because of this Supreme Court decision I just described, the federal government has gone in and spent all of our $3 trillion of trust fund funds. And what they have left in their place inside of the accounting of the trust fund is something called an STN, a special treasury note. A special treasury note is simply a IOU that from the federal government that says when the Social Security payments that need to go out exceed the current taxation receipts, the federal government will guarantee the difference. And so I am telling you all of this to explain to you FDIC, okay? In other words, we have a lot of promises out there from the federal government that actually has not a lot of real actual dollars or assets backing up those promises. And the federal government, to get away with that because the full faith and credit of the U.S. Treasury has been the most powerful centralized monetary power outside of London for the last 100 years. And so we have been able to get away with that. And so FDIC insurance doesn't have to have a big balance beyond, 200 plus billion or something. But once this begins, people are going to see how woefully unprepared the federal government actually is with actual asset reserves. And of course, we haven't had an audit of Fort Knox gold out of Texas and who knows actually how long, an actual count of our gold.
Whoa. You sound like Ron Paul there. Ron Paul's not sure the gold's really there. What do you think?
I mean, I think that, a government that is not accountable to its people is got a lot of problems.
Yeah, indeed they do. This article, the Daily Mail, says 11 U.S. major banks band together in a private sector rescue deal on March 16th, infusing First Republic with $30 billion in deposits, but the deal has failed to shore up investor confidence, with the bank's stock down 90% since the infusion. First Republic earlier this week said its deposits had slumped by more than $100 billion in the first quarter. So $100 billion in the first quarter, deposits slumping. Does that mean $100 billion? Doesn't mean $100 billion came out of the bank from people pulling money out, does it?
No, I mean, that's exactly what it means. That either people spent their accounts down or people withdrew money because they were very alarmed after March 9th and SVB. And First Republic was very tangential, the same time as SVB. And, you know, you really saw this sort of separation of the two. I think it was almost intentional that we could, you know, handle, the government could handle one bank and backstop that. And we can deal with that, even though Yellen announced on Sunday on CNN that there would be no bail. Out. Obviously, Biden came out the very next morning before trading even opened on the floor and not only said there was going to be a bailout, but there was going to be a making a whole. And that was very concerning because SVB Bank, we know, is a venture capitalist bank, and it was 99% owned by institutional shareholders. So that was a true, let's buy out the guys that run the money. Let's buy those guys out. And then there was this First Republic kind of pushed over the side, and then we started hearing about this, you know, these big banks. And obviously, the big banks and the Federal Reserve are like this, right? They are overnight lending relationships to meet reserve requirements. There's the reverse repo market for money market, overnight deposit crediting. So the big banks and the Federal Reserve are literally two parts of the same functioning body that could not right now live without each other. Obviously, we're trying to get rid of third-party commercial banks as we move to direct banking with the central bank, or i.e. the Federal Reserve on the FedNow digital dollar platform with the central bank digital currency. But for right now, the commercial banks are a big part of it. So you saw that they sort of pushed First Republic over here and dealt with it differently. And then the news really only focused. Go back and check the news. I'm telling you, this was a design plan to get one bank over here and have it quash, right? And let's just deal over here with SVB. Of course, you also had Credit Suisse happen at the same time, UBS, all of that. But that, just in America, we were just focused on those two really big names. And now you can see that it was just obfuscation, moving it down the road till announcing it on a Friday. And now we have this $30 billion that came from these banks that, once again, going back to FDIC. So it's what I said from the beginning, Brandon. We thought they were going to do enough to just throttle it for just long enough. And we're right back to square one.
How many banks does this put in queue to follow this now? So another week, 2 weeks, another month, another 2 months. We're gonna be doing more shows like this, right? I mean, I'm gonna be seeing these stories, texting you and saying, hey, can you come on and talk about this next bank? This is gonna become a pattern for us here, right?
I mean, we did have, like we talked about on Tuesday night, Moody's did downgrade 11 regionals. So we do see the regionals. I actually prefer the smaller banks. I don't think that people are thinking rationally when it comes to this. I mean, to take money out of a diversified regional bank that probably does have some local issues, because all banks have issues right now. It's a liquidity crisis globally. This is not just relegated to the banking sector. We have a commercial bond crisis. We have a sovereign debt crisis. There are the whole world. I don't want to be alarmist on this program, because I do think there are things that can be done, in a strategic fashion to prepare for this. So I'm not trying to be alarmist, Brandon, but at the same time, I am going to tell you what I see. This is the economic crisis that we've been bracing for. And I know that there's a lot of talking heads that are on mainstream channels saying the dollars, the de-dollarization, which mainstream media has now actually, acknowledged is happening. It is finally broken through to the mainstream, which means it can no longer be, camouflaged anymore in the real world. It's finally broken through. So now that we see that, what I'm seeing are certain particular very pinpointed people that are out there saying, if you think the dollar is going to go anywhere, it's going to take 50 years. I mean, we have at least 10 years. We have, all these people are saying all these things. They have no understanding.
And one of them who shall remain nameless, one of them who I agree with on getting out of debt and being debt free and saving and conserving so that you can live better in the future. I agree with that. But my word, he is so hostile to gold. But then again, he probably, you know, one reason it might be is that, you know, when your money is all based on endorsing financial planners and cutting spots for financial planners and lending your voice to financial planners, I mean, you know where your bread's buttered, right? But this guy is so hostile to gold, this financial guy I'm talking about. Every time I see a clip from him, he's, you're crazy to take your money out of the bank. You're crazy. And talk about how everything's going to be fine and you're crazy to put it into gold. And I'm thinking to myself, has this guy never heard of diversification? I mean, I heard one of them one day say, gold is, you know, gold doesn't pay a dividend. Yeah, but gold also doesn't have any liability against it, right? And gold is a good hedge against inflation. Gold can also be private. Then I heard him say something about the long-term strategy of the stock market. Okay, fine. But in the 1929 crash, didn't it take like till the 1960s for some of those people to be made whole? And if you're 60 or 70 years old, you don't have 30 years for the stock market to come back. So I don't understand why some of these guys are still so hostile to gold and silver, because I'm thinking, why wouldn't you just want some diversification? I mean, no one's saying 50% of your portfolio. What's wrong with 5%, 10%? Why are these guys so hostile, even in the face of what we're seeing, and they're still being hostile? He's going out of his way to criticize people that are diversifying in their precious metals.
Well, that is a very easy answer, Brandon, that I can give you. I could write a book on just this topic alone. I will just tell you that the thing that when you get into this world, my world, the world of finance, when you get into this world and you start to really understand who runs the financial world, it's the institutions. It's institutional money. Wall Street exists for the institutions. We like to pretend, we like to go on these business shows and talk about this and that. The truth is, Wall Street does care about the retail mom and pop investor, but that's only because since 1981, they've had a massive dollar cost monthly buy-in from the 401k employers across the United States that has basically taken Wall Street from initially in the 80s and earlier, you know, only something that people with, you know, I would say high net worth, you know, even extreme high net worth that had the ability to have private financial advisors, stockbrokers would have retail access to. Otherwise, it was really not even something that the average person dealt with. They had a pension, they saved some money, they had some CDs, and they had the beginning of Social Security. So that was kind of our traditional model. Once we went to the 401k and we moved from defined benefit pension system to the defined contribution system where all of the risk is on the employee, now the employees thought, oh gosh, we have access to this Wall Street. Isn't this wonderful? They had no idea what they were doing. They were given subprime options in their 401k, but they dollar cost average in, and Wall Street said, this is a gold mine, a gold mine. Anything that threatens the viability of that dollar cost average deposits and, you know, contributions towards your retirement coming into Wall Street from retail on a monthly basis is going to be quashed, because it must be quashed, because Wall Street does not want to see anything getting in the way of its message of long-term 30-year trajectories. We can all talk about how things have gone up. You know, a house from 30 years ago is a lot cheaper than a house 30 years later. That could just be inflation. So are we dealing with inflation? Are we dealing with true actual market growth over 30 years? Listen, I don't want to come across as I don't love the market. I absolutely love the market. I am a huge fan of the market. My practice has been in what I call a bridge strategy position since November of 2021, when I did the analysis and I saw, holy Lord, what was coming. We are at the end of a 100-year system. It is ending.
And the central banks know it
a lot faster.
And the central banks know it. Look at this headline from Business Insider from just a couple days ago. Central banks are leading a revolt against the U.S. dollar and shifting to gold at a record pace, market experts say. I'm going to have her respond to that, but we're going to take a few calls. Rebecca has graciously agreed to take some of your calls tonight before we go to Patrick Wood, Tina Peters. So the number, 901-316-8404, 901-316-8404, 901-316-8404. And by the way, folks, yes, we are going to hopefully open up next week. I'm going to work on it over the weekend. for you to purchase tickets for my 20th annual Ozarks Worldview Weekend. Now, I've been holding Worldview Weekends for 30 years this past February, but the one in the Ozarks I've been doing for 20 years. And I'm going to have General Flynn. I'm going to have Mike Lindell. I'm going to have Patrick Wood. I'm going to have Dr. Peter McCullough. He couldn't make it last year. We had him, and he got double booked. So he's told me and confirmed with me tonight. He'll be with us. We're going to have Alex Newman. And I might even invite Joe Allen. I'm thinking about that. And I've invited Rebecca here, but I'm not. I think she might be in another country or something. October 19th and 20th. Oh, so we could always pray her trip gets canceled.
I might just make it. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Okay. 901-316-8404. 901-316-8404. So while the calls are getting on here, here again, Business Insider, the central banks are buying up gold, but yet we have guys on talking television or these shows that are making you feel like you're a fool if you diverse into precious metals.
Well, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think if you check into that track record, you'll see actually there's some really high profile examples of that person saying very specific things to buy right before those things crash. So I just don't think that, you know, anyone, listen, there are three types of asset classes right now in the universe, right? That are going, how I'm classifying assets right now. The first type of asset class are assets that we actually expect to do and perform to the upside through this transition, okay? That's the first class. Obviously, best class to have, gold, silver, metals. That's the only thing in that class. We only have history of 5,000 recorded years of history in one thing, and that is gold and silver, and that is it. So that is the first asset class. However, Brandon, even though I'm saying 2023 is a big, huge economic black swan year based on all of the stuff I've seen, even though I'm saying that, I'm not God, and ultimately this timing is not on my hands. So let's just say that it does take 18 more months, okay? Just hypothetically, let's say it's gonna take 18 more months, which by the way, for most people would be shockingly fast. And that is what I'm going to tell your audience. This change will come shockingly fast once it comes. It is not going to be a long slog. It is absolutely going to go very, very fast.
Are you saying fast? Do you mean a day, a week?
It's very fast because of the nature of technology and
like
everything being
digitized. Like that clip we played of the Democrat congressman saying
exactly.
Within one day, the whole world would have been, I mean, it would have been over in one day.
That's exactly right. And because they will use things to shut down and to delay, but once things reopen, it will go very, very fast.
They'll do the Ice Nine, like Jim Rickards talked about. He calls it the Ice Nine, where they lock everything down to stop runs, electronic runs, and they got to try to refigure and reset everything, right?
They absolutely have to.
And by the way, that means your credit cards aren't going to work when you go to the grocery store, because how are you going to know you're not paying $5 for a loaf of bread that should be $25? And so even the people that own the grocery store are gonna be, you know, I guess their current inventory is what it is, and it's bought at that lower price. But at some point, they're not even gonna want to sell anything because they can't be making any future purchases based on, you know, just pulling numbers out of the air. Everybody's gonna have to put their brakes on. I mean, everybody's gonna have to. I mean, for instance, we sell freeze-dried food. At some point, we'll say, okay, we got this inventory. We know we paid for this inventory, but we got to stop. We can't be taking in more orders that's going to be based on inventory yet to come in. You know, I got to place an order for that inventory to come in. I don't know what I'm going to have to pay for the next shipment. I could have to pay three times more than I'm charging because they're going to reset the dollar. And so I'll have to stop selling freeze-dried food and emergency supplies, whereas now I can keep selling because my vendor always lets me know when they're going to raise prices. So, okay, I'm getting to the end of my inventory I have now. I've got another order I'm putting in tomorrow or the next day or whatever, and I'm okay to keep selling because I know that what's selling today is based on the inventory that'll be coming right behind that I'm about to buy. But if there's a collapse and now everything's going to be reset, I would have to say, oh, turn off the computers, stop selling, because I want to make sure I don't run out of my current inventory, go into my next inventory shipment that I'm about to make and I'm about to pay for, because I don't know what I'm going to have to pay for it. Therefore, I don't know what I'm going to have to sell it for. So I would have to stop everything myself, or I'm going to lose two, three times what I'm paying for the product. correct?
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much went to Deming's just-in-time delivery of goods and services, which is what you're describing. And you're basically having to front-load the price before you're actually collecting any revenue because you're trying to time the inventory. So I understand completely, Brandon. And you're right. And I just think that, you know, I'm a big believer in some ownership of actual physical metals. And I know, we do not in any way deal in metals. We obviously refer people to Swiss America. We really believe in them and we really have a great relationship with Wes. But the fact is that, you know, a lot of these people call whoever and they're told, oh, you need to buy the Cougaran, you need to buy the Eagle. And all of that stuff is totally not necessary. We don't need that. When we're talking about, and I don't want to put it this way, but I don't know how else to say it. When we're talking about kind of a black market situation where the world economy as we know it has sort of changed overnight, and now we're having to go into maybe a barter transaction situation, you know, it's going to just be the stamped values of pure weight that is going to determine what that coin is worth. It doesn't matter if it's a minted coin, it's an Eagle, it does not matter. That's irrelevant. We're just talking about the true value of the metal. And if you can get, and a lot of people want to buy bars and these big denominations, and it's like, well, take a bar to the local store and try to buy a piece of bread and see what change they give you. You can't buy the store out. So, you know, I like dealing in small denominations of metals with that you can keep at home safely in a safe. Hopefully you have a fireproof safe if possible. And that's really good. But just because metals are the asset class that we expect to pop to the upside, that doesn't mean that can be the only asset class. It can't be. We still have to do a financial plan, because if this thing takes 60 months or 10 years, like some people are speculating, then we can't be in just gold.
Right. So that's where you buy some gold and silver, you buy some properties, assets, land.
We're doing other things that we expect will do very well.
And what else would that be?
Transition.
Like that, would that be treasuries for you? I mean, what would that be?
No. Remember, I'm not heavily weighting to anything that's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. Treasury. So bank CDs that are FDIC insured and U.S. Treasuries and U.S. bonds, all of those for me right now, suspect, risk on, very, very risk on assets. For me and my world of risk and monetary policy, and I hate to say this publicly, but this is the truth of, I'm very transparent. This is very risk on. So I would be, I'm not anti-dollar, but I am anti-dollar in an asset class that is insured only by the full faith and government, full faith and credit of the U.S. government, U.S. Treasury.
Now, if
that
again,
is a problem.
I'm saying this on my own just so our audience doesn't get frustrated. If you guys are wanting, and again, she doesn't pay to come on here, okay? She comes on here because I want to have a conversation with someone like her that's educated what's going on. And I promote all my guests and their websites. But I also will put out the disclaimer so I don't have any of my audience upset. She only is able to help, again, due to her insurance, due to her licenses, due to regulations. She has to classify and she has to qualify investors, okay? And so she does not, she also has employees and other costs. So she only deals with people that have at least a net worth of $250,000 or more. So don't expect, because I don't want you getting upset with her or me, don't expect you're just going to call her up and she's going to sit on the phone and chit chat with you. She has multiple staff. She's happy to help you guys. I think a lot of you are calling. I think she's turned some of our listeners into clients, but she's for people that have at least a $250,000 net worth or higher, because again, there are rules and regulations in the world she runs in, and people have to be qualified investors. And some of those figures for some people are $250,000, some it's $1 million. Depends on what's going on. So just understand. But if you're in that classification and you're wanting to contact her, it's walzerwealth.com, walzerwealth.com. Now, as you can imagine, our phone lines are lit up. So let's go to some of the calls real quick. We have Annette in New Mexico, line one. Annette, thanks for calling in. You're on with Rebecca Walzer.
Hi. Thank you, Brandon, and thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca, can you list, like, what are some bridge assets?
Yeah, well, I mean, my first category would be the assets that we expect to go to the upside. So those would be our actual gold, silver. I'm really a big gold and silver bug. I don't really go to the platinums or anything else. But I would say definitely the number one asset class that I expect to do the best would be God's money, gold and silver. The second category of asset class is that we expect to perform well. And this is a very difficult economic concept. So I just want to take 2 seconds to explain it. And that is real estate, and risk-based risk management products. So what do I mean by this? Because it's confusing. So let me explain. So I'm not suggesting that you go out and under any way and buy real estate right now at this moment, but I just want to give you guys kind of this big picture. Let's say that you bought a house when interest rates were 3% and you were able to afford at a 3% a $600,000 house, okay? Now interest rates have gone up to say 7%, 6 to 7%, and now that same house, and this is just an example. I'm not saying this is what has happened. I'm giving you guys an example. That same $600,000 house that could be 600 at a 3% rate, at a 6 to 7% rate, now that house drops to 300,000 to equate approximately the same payment. So now people can afford a lot less house. So what I'm trying to say is, in a normal market situation, when interest rates go from as low as they are to as high as they are, it's absolutely an economic fact that the price of houses will retreat, because the disparity of that payment is not offset by an offsetting increase in income. So because income is relatively stagnant, in fact, real wage growth has gone down, people cannot afford that $600,000 house with that 6 to 7% rate. So the value of the house will come down. Okay, now, if the value of the house comes down universally across the board in the entire country, have you really lost $300,000 of net worth? And the answer is yes, you have lost $300,000 of net worth from a $600,000 house to a $300,000 house, but you've only lost it in an absolute way, because relatively speaking, everybody has had the same real estate diminution in value across the board. The entire real estate sector, overpriced when we had cheap money, has to come back down to a true organic location with non-cheap money. And therefore, it is a relative adjustment that's shared by everybody. And therefore, it is an asset that still truly maintains its overall value. So those would be an example of another bridge asset, an asset that has true intrinsic value, whether in real estate it's the land, the brick, and the mortar. It is going to, even if it's revalued to the downside, in an absolute term, it is relatively going to preserve your net worth. So those are the two asset classes that we're leveraging. The one asset class that we're avoiding at all costs, unless a client absolutely demands to have risk on, is bonds and equities, because those are financial derivative based products, not true assets based on hard, true underlying assets. And that's where you're really going to have, when you have an economic black swan, that's where most Americans are staying status quo, are going to unfortunately lose a substantial amount of their net worth.
And I'm assuming you're talking about someone's personal house now, right? Not their rental property or something.
Oh, I was just Brandon, giving the example of houses in general. But, you know, I'm just saying that when we had such low rates for so long, we've had low rates since 2008. Right. So you had these massive explosions of the value of homes. It wasn't that. It's like, I can afford this payment. This house can now be $600,000.
Right.
When you can't do that, you're going to see the values actually trend down, because they're just overpriced.
Let's go to Carol in Florida. Line two, Carol, you're on with Rebecca Walzer. Hi, Carol. Carol.
Mortgage.
There she is.
You might use your network.
Start over.
Yeah, so with a house that you lose your net worth on because the value decreases, but what about if you can't pay the mortgage? What happens then? I mean, I wouldn't care about my net worth. I just want to be able to keep the roof over my head.
Okay, so I am talking just specifically about asset strategy, and I can't also layer on top of that mortgages, because like if you own stocks and bonds, unless you have a margin account, you're not leveraging that. So I'm just talking about an asset, and I'm describing an asset value reevaluation. When you start adding leverage in the terms of a mortgage, we have another layer of a calculation, and that goes much more case by case. The only thing I could really say at a high general level to kind of address that concern, because your concern is absolutely valid, is think in terms of what they have done for 2020 in terms of student loans and in terms of mortgages, right? Student loan payments were paused and have remained paused, and the interest has remained paused, right? So that has been something. They also put a moratorium, which I believe is completely unconstitutional, and that will be worked out through the legal system. But they put a moratorium on evictions. So leverage is a separate issue. I'm just talking asset value and preservation of asset value. Leverage is separate, and that we would have to deal with that as a separate and distinct issue.
No problem. Logan's apologizing to me. I turned out I was right. They were wrong. Someone had the wrong line on there. So, Carol, that was why there was a delay. Walter, I'm sorry you dropped. You thought we were calling for you, and so you can call back in. Let's go to Stacy in Arizona, line one. Stacy, go right ahead, Stacy.
Hi. So I am trying to find out where Rebecca has all of her platforms for her podcast and everything. I looked at information that was on her website, and one night on your show, she had mentioned that she was working on something really, really critical, but she couldn't talk about it until after she had done her podcast or
right, and she did.
And I never heard about it after that. And
okay,
so
she came back on and she actually released that on YouTube. So just type in her name, Rebecca Walzer. You'll find it on YouTube. It was probably about a month and a half ago or so. And so she did release it. She came back, but it's still archived. If you just go to YouTube and type in Rebecca Walzer, you should be able to find that show pretty quick, right, Rebecca?
Yes. That show was that podcast is, I get chills watching that and the information. And I actually, you know, I have a really super intelligent client. I talk really fast, you guys. I apologize. That is just the speed of my, I can't talk as fast as I think, and that's hard. I try. But I have a super intelligent client. Anyways, bottom line is I'm amazed by his intellect. And, you know, he watched that podcast, and his distinct opinion back to me, Brandon, was he loved my run rate, he called it, of information. He's like, most people, and even myself, I had to watch that three times just to really understand everything I put in an hour and a half. But someone at his level, and I'm not nearly at his level, he was like, that was the perfect speed of information for my brain, because he has the ability to listen and like literally research two other things at the same time. The guy was phenomenal. He's like, that's my run rate. And no one delivers it to me ever. He goes, but your podcast did. So I'm going to warn your audience. It is very dense. It is an hour and a half of extremely dense information that consolidates and explains why, unfortunately, we no longer have medical freedom in this country. We actually don't have any actual travel freedom. They have to have certain things that are happening in order to deal with the laws that they've written. But the truth is that we are at the point of the government being completely in charge of our body autonomy, and Americans need to know that.
Indeed they are. And as you know, we've been covering the World Health Organization pandemic treaty coming up in May. The guys that we talked to are saying they may slow walk it and pull back a little bit because we brought too much attention to it.
That's what happened last year.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So they may slow walk a little more of this, but he said, don't think they're not going to do this. They are going to do it. He even came on the other night, James Rogowski, and said that they are actually putting in all the procedures so that when they do it, it's the system, the architecture is already there. We'll get to that tonight as well, a little bit with Patrick Wood, but you're absolutely right on that.
And Brandon, just really fast. I just want to say, the Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act in 2009, that was part of this. This has been planned for a long time.
Yes.
This is why when people say the dollar and the ultimate de-dollarization is going to take 50 years, I absolutely know we're not even looking at 10 years. I have a much better idea of what the time frame is. I just can't say things publicly because I'm not going to take responsibility for what people do or think. But what I will say is that when you see how long everything has been done and coordinated, and you're talking about the WHO pandemic treaty, but I'm talking about we went to ICD-10 for international healthcare code tracking under Obamacare, which was coordinated through the World Health Organization, and all of these things are coming together at the same time. Why are 81 countries going, which by the way is the definition of the Great Reset, why are 81 countries going to central bank digital currency in 2023 at the same time the World Health Organization is trying to take away country sovereignty of its health and bodily autonomy of its citizenry? You know, why are all these things happening at the same time? And it's, do not allow people to make you question your authentic thought of rational logic by saying that it's a conspiracy theory. That was a CIA planted thing back after Kennedy, when, you know, no one was buying the government's Kennedy explanation because of all of the, it doesn't matter. I won't even go there. The point
no, you're
is
absolutely
that
right.
And that then you was add never to it- in American parlance until post-Kennedy, and people said, what is going on? This is not adding up. And all of a sudden, the CIA introduced conspiracy theory into the parlance, and now everyone says it. I pity the person who calls me a conspiracy theorist, because I am in a global world of very progressive liberal people, and I do well in that world. I make friends with everybody, because that's what Christ wants us to do. We are to be the example of the love of Christ, and that's what I try to do. But if you try to say I'm a conspiracy theorist when I am the most fundamentally based mathematical legal fact person that I think I have ever exist in this kind of job, because it's a lot of theory, right? Economic and macro and theory. But yet I want the facts. I want the data. I want the math. I want the numbers, because then I know that I can establish a framework and I can defend my viewpoints.
And you're an attorney.
That's the lawyer in me.
I was going to say, you're also an attorney. Just remind our audience.
Yeah.
By the way, here, look at this headline. Worldview Report. This is our website, worldviewreport.com. This was the other night. World Health Organization calls for accelerating preparedness for global threat. But why?
Yes.
Okay, folks, this was their press release the other day. Again, this goes to what I was talking about last year, folks. I did the whole series on the convergence of end-time events. And I went through about, I don't know, 20, 25 things that were all happening and happening at the same time. And the fact, if you had five of them happening, you'd go, that's really weird. But you got 25 or 30 of these things all happening at the same time. What are the statistical odds and probability of this? You know, you mentioned the conspiracy thing being put into the vernacular of the American culture by the CIA because they didn't want anyone questioning, you know, the Kennedy assassination, because the CIA, I think, killed him, and they were the ones now trying to cover it. So you have them, of course, running exercises with the event 201 event, you know, for the pandemic. But we had in 2012 legislation passed to redo some legislation, and it was known as the Smith-Mundt Act, the Mundt-Smith Act, or a Smith-Mundt.
Smith-Mundt.
Smith-Mundt, okay. And so by 2013, that becomes law. And that, as I've read it, and I've gone and watched about five or six different experts talk about it to see if they're all saying the same thing, and they all seem to agree that by 2013, the federal government that was using things overseas, and we're not allowed to use that here, that passed in 2012, became law in 2013, and now our federal government can use federal funds to propagandize the American people in 2013. All of this is happening under Obama at the same time these other things are going on. They're setting the stage.
Yeah. Yes. I wish that it wasn't true, but you are 100% right. I mean, that was a change in the Smith-Mundt Act, and it was the ability to basically lie to the American people.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to Teresa before we go to Patrick Wood and then Tina Peters. Teresa in New York. Teresa, you're on with Rebecca Walzer tonight.
Yes, I have two quick questions. Are U.S. savings bonds, would they be able to be redeemed, and are credit unions affected the same as banks?
I'm sorry, Brandon, Say
that one more time, please, Teresa.
Okay. Can U.S. savings bonds be redeemed after the Great Reset, and are credit unions affected the same as banks?
Okay. I'll take the credit union one first, because it's much more simpler. Credit unions are what we call mutual cooperative organizations. So kind of like a mutual insurance company. A credit union is owned by its members. So it's a cooperative. It's not a bank under the banking rules, but it does have similar laws that deal with reserves and those kinds of things. The credit union does not go through the FDIC system. It goes through the NCUA system. So it is a different group. And for that reason, I'm a big fan of credit unions, and I've definitely encouraged clients and publicly encouraged people to look at their credit unions as an alternative to a traditional regional or national bank. As far as the ability to redeem treasuries, treasury notes, bonds, any of those things post Great Reset, according to your terminology that you used, I couldn't speak to that because we will have to wait and see what actually happens and how everything goes down. But I will just again reiterate the point I made earlier, which is I'm a big fan of assets that will preserve value, even if that preservation is in the dollar. But I am not a big fan of those assets that are preserving value in the dollar in an institution that is backed up only and solely by the full faith and credit of the U.S. Treasury, which would be CDs, treasuries, not notes and bonds. I'm not a fan of U.S. Treasury right now because we are going through the beginning of the de-dollarization of the world.
One more call. Ruth from California, you're on with Rebecca Walzer, line one. Thanks for calling in, Ruth.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Great. Oh, I love your show.
Thank
Try
you.
To watch it every day.
Thank you, Ruth.
If the channel isn't gone, kaboop. Like it has for a couple of days.
I know. We've heard that. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I'm wondering what you think of using credit unions rather than banks. Now, I know everything's going to be messed up, you know, no matter what. But is there any value to switching from a bank to a credit union?
Yes, absolutely. I love credit unions. Absolutely. A credit union is, I think, a better strategic decision right now.
Excellent.
Yes.
Thank you, Ruth. All right. Thanks to all of you. And Rebecca, look at this article here I just pulled up. Largest supply deficit. Analysts have long been pointing to a severe shortage of silver due to the relentless growth in demand for the metal, which is used in many industrial applications, such as automobiles and electronics. I think it's used in about 2,000 applications or more. So silver is kind of oftentimes called the poor man's gold. But whether it's silver, gold, numismatic, you can take it in physical possession. The numismatic 1933 and older is private, which a lot of people like. It can also provide not only the spot price, but then you're making some money on the intrinsic value. So there's pros and cons. But, of course, that's why we offer the free packet of information. Now, if you want to get it on paper, then Rebecca is who you call. She doesn't do it in the physical. That's Wes Peters. And I'll give you that number in a minute if you get a pen. Rebecca, however, does it on the paper side, along with everything else she does. And if you have a net worth of $250,000 or more, she can help you out there at walzerwealth.com, correct?
Absolutely. That's perfect.
All right. Thanks, as always, for being with us. Glad we were able to take some calls.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you,
hey,
Brian.
And let us know if October 19th or 20th would work for you. I mean, if your plans haven't been completely finalized or it gets canceled.
I think I get back on the 18th. So I think when you told me originally, I wasn't sure of my dates, but I'm pretty sure I'm back on the 18th. So I think it would work for me.
All right. So. I'll be texting you about it then.
All right.
Thank you. Rebecca Walzer checking in. Check out her site, walzerwealth.com, walzerwealth.com. Now, if you would like to get some information, free information on getting the physical metals in your possession, that is Wes Peters, as she mentioned, and Swiss America, who we've been working with for about 17, 18 years. And in fact, I was on the phone today with their CEO, who's also a close personal friend. Now, if you would like to text Wes your name and address, Wes will send you the free packet of information. Wes always comes to our Ozarks Worldview Weekend. You'll be able to meet Wes in person. That right there tells you a lot because he is taking care of so many of our people over the years, and they're so happy. He has no problem showing his face and exhibiting at our conference. In fact, he likes to. And many of the people are like, hey, Wes, come over here and sit with us. And I find Wes surrounded by some of his clients sitting at the table for our concert banquet on that Thursday night last year. So Wes is pretty popular because he takes care of people. You know, that says a lot. I mean, if he wasn't doing people right, A, he wouldn't want to show his face, and B, they wouldn't be happy to see him. But Wes is quite popular with our group because he does treat them right. He does right by them. And he's not a hard-pressed sales guy. He's an education guy. And once you get the education, you can then ask him questions and make the decision that is best for you. I don't give financial advice. I give financial opinion. But my opinion is you should call Wes Peters or just text him your name and address and say, hey, Wes, send me the free, no obligation packet of information on precious metals, putting gold in your IRA, all that kind of stuff. Numismatic versus the bullion, the fresher stuff, or 1933 and older, and the privacy it offers. 602-558-8585. 602-558-8585. All right, there you go. Now, before we go to Patrick Wood, I want to play a quick spot for you because, you know, we have emergency freeze-dried food. We have emergency supplies. But we also added about 2 weeks ago QMI security shutters. I think you should not only be thinking about your financial security, but your physical security, because I think people are going to go a little stupid. And I'm a little afraid of some of them, to be honest with you. I've had QMI shutters on my front door. I think you might want to consider the same. Grab a pen and paper. Get ready to take down this name and number. The name is Alex, and here's the number as well. Watch this. Hello, I'm Brandon House for QMI Security Shutters. Did you know that about 35% of break-ins occur at the front door? That's why I had a QMI security shutter installed at my front door several years ago. You didn't even know there was a security shutter there until I pushed the button, right? By the way, QMI has been around for over 40 years, and they've done over 50,000 installations between businesses and residential. And in fact, they have 95% of the pharmacies secured in America and many, many of the big box stores. But they're not just for businesses, they're also for residential homes. They come in a variety of colors, and it's made of the sturdiest material in the industry. You'll sleep better at night knowing you have the QMI security shutters. By the way, they have the smallest housing in the industry. So when the shutter rolls up, it's rolling into the smallest housing in the industry. Oh, and by the way, there's a little knob there. You just take a pole that they provide for you, and you could crank it should the power go out. No trouble there. Why not call the number on the screen now? Call QMI, and they'll find you a certified installer in your area right now. Remember, they come in a variety of colors, and you're going to sleep a lot better knowing that you have a QMI security shutter securing your house, just like I do. Tell them Brandon House sent you. All right, welcome back. And here's the number also if you want to ring the phone right on the desk of Alex, our contact there at QMI. That number is 630-980-7336. Again, 630-980-7336. I'll give the number one more time. Area code 630. That's area code 630-980-7336. All right, ask for Alex. And if you have some of the measurements of your door or window, that'll help him get you a quicker bid and someone out there to help you out with that. All right. Don't forget about everything we got over there at WVWTVstore.com. We also just got in 3,000 bottles of the anti-radiation potassium tablets. Again, some companies are having a hard time keeping it in stock. We couldn't even get a distributor to sell it to us because they said they couldn't keep it in stock to even make it available to us. We were able to get 3,000 bottles. They're going quick, folks, because people just want to have them on hand. I've had some on hand for my family since after 9/11. We're making them available on our store under emergency supplies, WVWTVstore.com, WVWTVstore.com. Freeze-dried food, emergency supplies, and a whole lot more.